Hello and welcome to the Advanced Age Role Playing Gamers podcast. I'm Nathan, I'm your host. I'm flying solo today. Matt is otherwise engaged, so I've got a very special guest with me, a first-time guest, Matthias Johnson Hocke. Did I get that close?
Oh, it's almost perfect.
Okay.
Like an inbred Swede. Or inbred, that sounds really horrible. Inborn.
Okay.
Native.
It's fine. We're just gonna like stop digging a hole and move on. But yeah, it's a pleasure having you on.
Pleasure to be here.
Our first time meeting. I feel like I've talked to just about everybody else. So you're the last notch my belt there. But you back in 2016 launched the Simbarum RPG. Mm. So tell us a little bit about how you, about yourself and how you got started with Free League.
Yeah, well, 2011, after having spent too many years in the academy, I decided to call it quits and left, I think you call it tenure as a lecturer or an assistant professor at the local university to pursue, or at least make a stab at pursuing a career as a writer. And first, I worked a lot with computer games as lore development and script writer and whatnot. But I really, really, really wanted to try to, you know, live off of making tabletop role-playing games, because that had have been my passion for decades. And I just locally here in Sweden, we had sort of a hobby company in around the turn of the millennium that was called Järnringen, the Iron Ring. And we made a couple of games in Swedish only. Back then, you know, Kickstarter wasn't available in Sweden, for instance. Mm-hmm. So there was sort of another, and really we were pursuing other careers and having this like sort of a very time consuming hobby or pastime, also to keep in touch with all us, you know, spread over Sweden and over Europe. We made a game called Mutant Heirs of Doom. On license from the Fredrik Malmberg, who is the sort of grand old, I was about to say lady, but I mean, grand, can you be a grand old man?
Sure, why not?
Of Swedish role-playing. And we made an original game called Coriolis. And then like 2010, we sort of... Yeah, the steam went out of the whole thing and we started having children and whatnot. So for a couple of years there, we passed along our Coriolis brand to another group of friends, basically, who just started up doing a new version of Mutant called Year Zero. And some of these guys had also worked as had been freelancing for us, writing for Coriolis. So basically, those guys took over our torch or invented a new, shinier one that even reached beyond the Swedish borders, because they started producing Mutant Year Zero in English. So a couple of years later, when me and some of the guys from Järnringen decided that we cannot live without making role-playing games, and we hadn't made what we love the most, a fantasy role-playing game. So we said, okay, and I said to them, I don't have time for a hobby. So if we're going to do this, we're trying to make it real. And I contacted... our old friends, who were now Free League Publishing, named actually after a faction in our game, Coriolis. And we started slowly but surely working together, but it wasn't until 2018 that we sort of merged formally. And okay. since Free League was bigger in on the international scene, we had actually released, as I said, in 2016, Syndrome in English, but they were first out, so we decided to keep their name, Free League, and since then we have been one happy, slightly dysfunctional family making role-playing games for a living, and it's been a crazy ride.
That's amazing. Dysfunctional families are the best families, I think.
Creatively, it's not that bad, actually, when there is a little bit of tension.
Yeah, you find the holes in your logic if you can see it yourself. Sometimes it's a hard look in the mirror, but So you said you have a great passion for role playing games. What did you grow up playing? What were your main go tos for gaming?
I think I started out playing. I played a lot of Swedish role playing games first and foremost, like Drakar och Demoner, which is now we have acquired that license and branded it Dragonbane in English, and Mutant, of course, and Shock, which is kind of, do you remember Shill?
Like
vampire, werewolf hunter.
I have a copy right over on my bookshelf over there. Yeah,
we had a Swedish similar game that was called Shock. Anyway, Dungeons and Dragons was of course always there. I played a lot of Advanced, Warhammer, and a bit of Ars Magica, and then in the 90s migrated to the Storyteller games like Werewolf, Vampire, Mage. Those were the ones that we played most.
You're talking about my bookshelf. You're looking. That's pretty much what we did too. We a lot of no Drakar or Tawanar, but we made up for it because we are 50. We do an actual play too, so we do Dragonbane, and I'm down to our last two. I'm editing our last two episodes, so we did 50 episodes. And I've about over 1,000 hours of editing for that. So I've been living with Dragonbane for a couple of years now. It's been great. I really love that game.
Great to hear.
So now Free League has Sombarum, they have Dragonbane, you have The One Ring, and you have Forbidden Lands. They're all fantasy games. So what Sombarum is the really only thing I haven't played yet. So what I find that's different with Sombarum versus your other fantasy?
Yeah, first and foremost, since we this game was created already before we merged into one company, it has a unique rule set, which is a D20 roll under. I think you can find a lot of inspiration from both D&D, actually, different versions, because the lead game designer, Matthias Lilja, has been a passionate D&D, not only play, but scholar.
Okay.
Game mechanics scholar for many, many years. But also sort of a marriage between that kind of gaming and Epoch World, it's called, right?
One of these new Apocalypse World?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. All right, I got it.
I know it was a big... And also, I mean, we cannot escape our own history when it comes to role-playing, and that was steeped in basic role-playing. So we have a D20 roll-under system that is fully player-facing in the sense that the player rolls all the dice rolls. Okay. It's pretty easy to convert if the GM really, really want to handle the dice too, but you basically roll against one of your eight attributes or main characteristics, which has a score between 5 and 15, typically.
Okay.
And then before you roll, it gets modified by the basically difficulty of the challenge. So if you are trying to hit someone who is really quick and agile, you will have a negative modification on your score before rolling. We always try to modify before the roll so you know what you are rolling against, right? So
that's good,
when
yeah.
the dice land, you actually see directly if you failed or okay. succeeded. What can I tell you more? It has... At least that was the intention. It's often described as a mechanic that it's fairly close to the setting the game is staged in. It has something called a corruption mechanic.
Okay.
That sort of substitutes everything that's tied to like spell slots and whatnot. Instead of having a limited number of charges per day for your magic,
right.
so to speak, you incur corruption when you manipulate or violate creation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go far enough down that path, you will actually lose your humanity and turn into a raging abomination. If it goes that far. I skipped a few steps now, but I'm thinking we don't have too much time.
No,
So
what is the source in the setting? What is the source of the corruption? Is it the,
is it just
breaking the laws of nature, or is it what is
it? Yeah, what's the source of the corruption? Some would say it's creation itself reacting to being maltreated.
Mm-hmm.
Others would say that it is probably an effect or a result of civilization or humanity's lack of pruning and cultivating nature. So when nature gets to run wild, corruption flows. So there is in game a lot of debate surrounding this concept of corruption.
Okay.
And that is true for most things in the I guess if you talk to people who have played Simbrium, many absolutely would talk about the rule set and the play phrasing mechanic. I was super hesitant that just a passes here, parenthesis. I was super hesitant when this system was suggested by Matthias Lilja, my colleague. But having been the game master for, some years now, I can say that being freed from rolling dice and being able to focus on the drama and just managing large-scale battle situations or combat situations worked like a charm. But the thing that most people talk about is the setting. And it is, I don't know, it's so difficult. It is not grimdark. It is dark. Let me just take a couple of examples and I can try to elaborate on those. One of the things that if you would ask me who are the default enemy, who are the orcs, so to speak, of the Simbrium setting, it is the elves.
Okay.
Because the game centers the main setting centers around a vast old ancient forest called Davokar, and in that forest are not only lots of natural resources, of course, but also treasure, ruins from an ancient civilization called Simbrium that went under about a millennia ago. So naturally, the humans of the Ambrian kingdom south of this forest want to go in there, go and fetch all the nice trophies they can find under the canopy. Problem is the elves, specifically the elves of the Iron Pact, who claim they even have sort of this pact thing is something that was drawn up between humans and elves centuries ago, according to which the elves actually has the right to kill on sight if humans, trespass into the wrong parts of the woods. And the newcomers, the humans of today, who, we don't have that long of a memory. We right. tend to forget.
Yeah.
So the Queen Corinthia, as she's called, the ruler of the Ambrian Kingdom, she is, she's kind of ignoring, and so are all her subjects as well, and they try to push further and further into this gigantic forest. And if you really want to dig deep down into the setting and lore of this game, there is a 6-part adventure chronicle called The Throne of Thorns, which is about the Ambrian Queen and other factions competing to reach the legendary lost city of Symbar, which lies somewhere deep in this forest and allegedly houses the old Symbarian Empire's actual throne. A throne that is said to have some form of mystical properties. And there are prophecies and whatnot that says that whoever sits on that throne will reign supreme over the land. Yeah, you know the drill.
Of course. Yeah. That's so this queen. I read a little bit about her. She seems like kind of an interesting, very like mysterious character. Or any particular inspiration for her?
Oh, difficult to answer that one, because at least for me, when you reach a certain point in the development of a game setting, you stop designing it and start discovering it, right?
Okay, yeah.
So I early on knew there was a queen. I knew about her fate. I knew that some people claimed that behind that porcelain mask, she was captured in a war some years before the game sort of starts.
Right.
And came back allegedly deformed with burn marks in her face. So she carries a mask. And there are, of course, a lot of people who doubt that it's even she behind that mask. And if you play The Throne of Thorns, you will find out. If you don't want to play a 6-part chronicle or a campaign, you can decide for yourself. And okay. That's the great part with role-playing games, right? What happens at the table is not of our making primarily, but yours. So
as I think that's good that you kind of leave things at least in the core set, that you leave things kind of open for the players to decide. Just being at the table, you make up so much of the fiction, live collaboratively with the people that you're sitting there with. So
the big job. I mean, I think we, especially now when we're doing this Kickstarter, we get a chance to, because over the course of these, it's been 12 years actually since Symbrom launched in Sweden, in Swedish, and then 10 years was released in English. And over that time, we have produced, I don't know, is it like 15 or 20 hardcover books? And now we get the chance to sort of look everything over and compile it into a slimmer and more logical, I would say, a game line. So, for instance, we had four sort of core books the core rulebook, which we still have, and it's an all-in-one core rulebook, so it's really all, it's basically a starter set, a very meaty one, but still basically a starter set. And then we have the Game Master's Guide, which is sort of an optional rules adventure and the setting design, a lot of resources that you can build. Sort of, we have this thing called artifacts, that is the remnants of the old Cimmerian kingdom, basically, which is like magical treasure. Right. And okay. In this book, you have, I don't know, it's 30 or 40 such items, all with an adventure setup. So the okay. Game Master Guide is like brimming with stuff for the Game Master to use to create more adventures, advanced traps, rules for pitch battles, rules for domain management, and, you know. And then,
oh, like stronghold building, that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then we also have the bestiary or creature codex, that is, yeah, those three books is now again in this Kickstarter, but supplemented with material from what was a fourth core book, which was called, I have it here actually, the Advanced Player's Guide. Which okay. is more character creation and development options, some optional rules that has now switched places and jumped to the Game Master's Guide. And yeah, I mean, when we made these books, we did them with a couple of years in between. Yeah, we have good reasons to move things around and streamline things a bit.
Yeah, now that you have kind of this whole wide gamut of material for it, is you know, instead of having to switch between all these different books, you can kind of shrink things down and make
this
it easier.
Has been a long-standing wish from our community, the Simbrium community, absolutely. And what we also do is, because there's a lot of lore and setting information and GM secrets and whatnot in the episodes of the Throne of Thorns. Mm-hmm. So with this Kickstarter, we have the opportunity to lift that out of those six episodes and compile the setting and lore information into one book, which is called Davokar and Ambria, Darkness Rising. And if you want to use that as a basis for playing the adventures, the chronicle itself, fine. If you want to use it as a resource for creating your own homebrew stuff, totally fine that too. Not everyone is comfortable playing pre-written adventures. So,
and you have some new locations in this as part of this Kickstarter?
Yeah, the one thing that is sort of brand new is in, was it last year or the year before? Time flies. recently, in any case, I finished this enormous chronicle of the Throne of Thorns. And to me, an epic chronicle like that or campaign, it needs to have serious implications for the setting and its people, meaning that the player's choice is absolutely crucial on what happens next. And this means that we are basically finished with that region, the Davokar and Ambria region. We have already produced so much material, and there are a lot of players who haven't even discovered it yet, so they right. can keep exploring that region. We have moved on to basically another part of the same continent, to what is called the city-states of the Vendilin realm. And it will be a whole new campaign setting, we will see some adventures and stuff. Maybe not a six-part chronicle, because, yeah, I want to finish at least half of it before it's time for me to retire. But it will be a sort of a new, fully-fledged campaign setting. I'm super excited to get to show off this new. It's a little bit more. It, of course, in tone and style, similar to the main game setting,
right?
But with a couple of nice twists. One of the first things, our lead artist Martin Griep, who is also one of the designers and creators of the Simbrium world, he started wondering in terms of post-apocalyptic fantasy. So what we arrive at as new players in this Vendilion realm is sort of a small land area that is mysteriously healthy and safe, I would say. And around it, a land that has been totally devastated in an... Hold on to your hat. an elven invasion.
Oh, okay.
And the elves of Duskwood, which is sort of bordering to this realm, finally broke through the defenses and poured out onto the fields and just massacred everything, anything and everything in their path. And this is like 27 months ago when the game starts. So, and barely no one dares leave this haven, of course, mm-hmm. a haven. And not that it's particularly nice and cozy inside the borders of the haven, because it's crowded, it's a lot of sickness, disease, and scarcity in most respects. So there are those who brave the borders, who penetrate out into the unknown. The basic game map or setting map is from a couple of years before the invasion. So it's all lush and green and beautiful colors and whatnot. And it's up to the players, if they dare, to venture out there and see what's actually become of the land.
I think that's kind of the conditions that they're under makes for, I think, pretty easy character motivation to try to get out there if they, you know, need something to survive or they're, you know, they're just tired of, you know, living in those conditions. It's like, you know, there's got to be something better out there.
But also there's a great mystery, like, what happened? Why did they attack?
Yeah.
Are they just plain evil and want to kill us? Or is there some other truth behind it all?
That sounds like maybe a good for like a series of three adventures or something like that.
Yeah, but something like that. And probably a couple of minor companions or modules with, you know, just adventure locations that people can. We work quite a lot in Simbrium with adventure locations that are sort of, you know, sandboxes where you drop your players down, and often there are representatives of at least two, often three other factions in play somewhere in the vicinity, and you get to choose who to ally yourself with, and who to, by default, then make an enemy. So a lot of political kind of stuff going on as well.
So when you make a character, do you choose a faction to start with, or is that...
You can do that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You can start as a member of the Sun Church, for instance, or one of the Ambrian army or whatnot. But this is not a game that requires you to, if you're part of the Sun Church, that you have to live up to a certain set of morals or whatnot. Instead, we try to keep it a little bit more real, so that in a faction such as the Sun Church, there are quite a lot of strong-minded people who want different things, and who interpret the words of Prios, the sun god, in different ways. And you have basically, to keep talking about the Sun Church, it is basically made up of three different factions that meet in the Curia, which in the Symbrome setting is sort of the ruling council of the Sun Church. So the Theurgs, which are sort of the clerics, the wizard priests, okay. Wizards. Yeah, you have the Black Cloaks, that are sort of the internal Inquisition, you can say, of the. They keep mostly to their monastery. In the Titan Mountains, where they allegedly are housing a lot of peculiar creatures in the levels of cellars beneath allegedly, the monastery. Yeah. You do not want to be accused of being blight-stricken or dabbling with corruption if there are black cloaks about. They are sort of... Yeah, there are private or freelance witch hunters as well, and you should definitely stay clear of them too. But the Black Cloaks are, that's another league. And then finally, you have the Templars, which is the armed, obviously, the armed branch of the Sun Church. And, well, if you play the Throne of Thorns campaign, you will experience what seems like a pretty strong and steady faction can become altered to the extreme.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There are mystery. A lot of conflicts inside the Sun Church, and not least inside the Templar organization.
That's got a lot of flavor. And back in 2019, you held a adventure writing contest. And some friends of mine wrote adventure, and they won. They wrote Rite of Passages for kind of a Session Zero kind of thing for barbarians. So yeah, David South and my friend Mitchell wrote that together. They're,
I don't think did we host that competition, or was
that's,
it
according to Drive Through RPG? That's what I'm
okay.
reading.
But we may have been part of it. I think it was one of our Swedish friends, Isak Ström, the Ordemagica site. Anyway, you may. It's so long ago, man.
Yeah, it was. I know, it was a really long time ago
when I had hair and stuff. So
I'm really trying to hold on to mine, but barbarians. So what does that seem to be? Kind of a special thing is, I guess there's different barbarian tribes, and do you usually play barbarians? Is that
You can do that. The saga that we get to follow, this Queen Corinthia. She and her people were drawn into a long-standing conflict against a neighboring country for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And it basically ended with her own country dying. The swords were sort of turned lifeless, and there was disease. And yeah, these neighbors, they were kind of keen on sending waves of undead and whatnot against Corinthia and her people. So it ended with them migrating north of this mountain range called the Titans, up to what she claimed were her ancestral land. And in this area that we arrive in, and where the game is set, was already 14 clans of people that claim heritage back to the old Cimbrian Empire. And these clans, of course, the Umbrians, Corinthia, calling them barbarians is their idea, not mine. Yeah. So these clan folks, they were quite quickly subjugated, those who lived on the plains. And the Umbrians started building their new land, their villages and whatnot. But there are also 11 clans in the outskirts of Davokar Forest, in the brighter parts of the forest, where it actually is, you can live. I mean, there are predators coming out from the depths to hunt you also in the brighter areas. But it's possible to live there. And when the game starts, there is sort of some clans have more or less allied with Umbria, with the queen. Mm-hmm. Others are more hesitant, and some are, especially the ones furthest north, are downright hostile and does not want anything to do with this new queen. So there's a tension there, and you can say that the most interesting characters of the clan folks are the witches. The witches are sort of the most thing you come to, in D&D terms, you would call them neutral.
They are
sort of the perfect quest givers for a group of diverse NPCs. The Huldra, which is sort of the archwitch, the Queen Corinthia and her people call her the archwitch. She is sort of at equal footing with their grand chieftain Tharaban. So, in many senses, the clan folks are sort of, you have the civilized kingdom of Umbria on one side, and then you have the more nature creation huggers in the elves. Not that they are not very keen on hugging, I can tell you, more like shooting. And then you have the sort of the witches and their people in between. So that's sort of, if you look at Cimbrium, it is fairly obvious to everyone that it's the main conflict of the game is a reference people know, or many people know about, not everyone, of course, but Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. So civilization against nature or creation. And what would happen if creation had the capacity to sort of literally react to what civilization is doing to it. So that is sort of most of the factions, most of the conflicts, most of the intrigues in this setting sort of tie back to these factions that in turn align with the main conflict of the game.
So they're somewhere on that spectrum.
And then we are talking individuals, because as I said, you can find people in the church on basically both sides of the spectrum. And in every faction there are it's not very harmonious. I think it's my many years in the academy the world of university.
So university to church. So
to church.
So that's pretty interesting. That's got a lot of nuggets that a player could and a GM could to play with. So you got some new adventures as part of this Kickstarter.
It just dawned on me that we are mostly now talking about the Simbrium that is, and not the Simbrium that is to come.
Right,
but
right.
So we should rectify that. This new setting, we have or are about to unlock sort of a bonus adventure for this this setting, this new setting. But after that, we definitely do have plans for a series of more meaty adventures. Not as massive as the Throne of Thorns, I've already told you, but still, there is definitely stories to be told based on what you will find in this setting guide. And the setting guide, because and we almost always do it like this when it comes to Simbrium, and that the setting books and indeed the core rulebook has clear sections that are player facing, that players are not only I mean, they are not required to read them, but it is suggested that the players read them, so to make sort of their themselves and their characters at home in the setting. So, and it's no different with the Vendelin setting book. You will have a section that we have written with the intent of it being read by players to find their home in the setting and find, okay, where which part of town do my character come from and which taverns do I frequent and who are my, what do I think about the peacekeeper captain? Peacekeepers are sort of the city watch of Armarad City where you start playing, and so on and so forth. And then there is a super meaty section for the game master with a peek behind the scene. What? Okay, now you have read sort of the official version of what's going on in the city of Armarad and in the world around in the player section. And then when you get to the game master sections, you get to peek beneath the surface and see what's really going on. And plus a lot of plot hooks there will be a creature codex addendum with new creatures for this new setting.
Oh, fun.
And so on.
Yeah, and I see it referred to as cities, city states.
Yeah.
So this is a more, you're adding more urban.
Yeah, we are moving a little bit further ahead in terms of technology development.
Mm-hmm.
You have like the pendulum clocks, and you have advanced. I mean, that's maybe not something to mention, but they are very big on alchemy.
Okay.
And recently have made huge advancement in something called radical alchemy, which is based on, some say, in intense research of already existing stuff in nature. Others claim that nature has actually changed outside the safe zone, the haven. Something that the elves have done something to the land. And on the upside, it's great for the development of new alchemy. On the downside, well, you have to play and find out.
Yeah. Yes, maybe some kind of corruption stuff involved, but maybe.
I didn't say that.
So are there new character options that folks familiar with Simbrium are going to get excited about?
Yeah, character options. In the core book, I think there will be 15 different occupations divided between four sort of archetypes, the traditional ones. Hunter, rogue, warrior, and mystic, or mage, or whatever. These occupations are sort of templates. So it can be the captain, or the wizard, which is a one type of mystical tradition in this setting. It can be the guild thief. And if you sort of want a quick way into creating your character, you have suggestions linked to every occupation, how to place your starting experience points, what abilities to buy, what equipment to have, and so on. But you can start just about anywhere you want creating your character. And you're never locked into a class or a subclass or something like that. You can mid-campaign, you can decide that this horrifying experience made me not trust my sword anymore. And you can use your experience points to develop wizard or theurg or witch mystical powers instead. So that said, new material for character creation and development are sort of loose. It's not like we present three new subclasses. What we do is present four new occupations and link to them where there are some new character creation rules. So I just mentioned radical alchemy will be a new addition to the rule set that does not work, unless you really, really want to, in the Davoka region, but it works here. Oh. So it's specific for this new setting.
Okay.
You have this mystical tradition or mage school of astromancy. And they have specialized in leeching energy from the cosmos in order to perform magic, thus avoiding to incur corruption. So basically, you can spend your movement action leeching energy for your spell. Okay, now I'm not talking in Simbrium terms now, but in more general fantasy roleplaying terms.
Yeah.
So you can leech energy for your spell, and then you cast it with your combat action or whatever we want to call it, your long action. So that's that. That's some new spells or mystical powers, as we call them, and some new rituals, which is time-consuming kind of spells that you take. They take sort of an hour to perform and are more linked to problem solving and that sort of thing than combat. Then you have also the Harvester. Because this new wasteland, it's not a wasteland. It's a strange land outside of the haven. It is full of new strange, not only flowers and trees and whatnot, but new forms of minerals and new forms of liquids and new forms of creatures and beasts and stuff. I mean, should you believe all the rumors you hear in Armarat, you would think it's crazy out there. But there are those who venture out called harvesters, and they bring back stuff that mainly can be used in within the framework of radical alchemy. So they venture out, they manage to get back home with a backpack full of cool stuff, and they sell it to the alchemists, who then prepare it into components for their. Yeah, they can do alchemy on the fly. They can do.
Okay.
Yeah. They call it flash mixing, actually. Mm-hmm. Then there's the other kind of stuff where they do alchemical augmentations, where they basically operate you. sorry. But they sort of alter you. At least for temporarily on a basic physical level,
like cyborgs.
but with alchemy instead of technology.
So is it called flash alchemy because if it goes wrong, it blows up? Or
no, it's because it's fast.
Fast,
and you can do it on the fly.
Yeah.
You basically have a girdle with tubes that you either press or flick, or there are different types of releases, and you get one type of what's it called? Three types of components. One that is the effector, which tells us what kind of effect you're going to have. You have the catalyst, which determines how strong the effect will be. And then you may choose to not, but you may add a stabilizer so that you do not incur basically a form of corruption when you do this. So, yeah, and then finally there's the mercenary, which is a pretty straightforward occupation. So, but it's for people who are already playing Simrom, I should say that the mercenary will be accurate based, which is one of the main characteristics that is, yeah, some people think that it's a dump stat, and I want to show them it's not.
Okay.
By creating this occupation.
Okay. Well, there you go. You hear some feedback. It's like, well, you know, why are they dumping a stat? Let's make it interesting. So, you're doing pretty well with the Kickstarter so far. I'm looking at the page right now. It's really just a hair under 400K US. And you that will unlock something here. What is that? That unlocks a double-sided map of Thistlehold in the Davakar region.
Yeah. So it's basically the world map and a city map on a double-sided that we will place as a stand. What do you say? As a separate map in between the covers of the Davakar book. We have already unlocked a similar double-sided map for the Vendelin setting book. So you will open the book. It will be in plastics, and you open here. You have a big map, basically double-sided map that you can place on your table and marvel at.
I do like my maps. I actually have my Dragonbane cloth map over here.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess, and that's going to be something you're doing for this also. Yeah, I love the cloth map.
I'm so super happy. We have worked with Francesca. I think she did that map as well.
Yeah, she did.
She did a fantastic job with this one, I must say. And then the city map is Moreno Paisan and I forget her name. Very, very beautiful city map as well.
Yeah. And Johan Noor's doing the layout again for this.
I saw him post it. Yeah. He will be, I mean, the graphic design is his.
Yeah.
From the start. Yeah. And I asked him already kind of 2 years ago, if I'm doing this, do you want to be part of it? And do you want to see if there is something just to, you know, update or freshen up the style without making it totally different. And he has done that, and I'm super happy with the result. So I hope others will be as well.
I'm sure they will. I'm a big fan of his work. So what are the timelines for this? How much time is left? It's going to take me a couple of days to edit this, but...
When we are speaking now, the Kickstarter, it's launched on Tuesday, and today it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's Thursday, the day before. And we are already at almost 400K US dollars, so that's good progress. We will keep going until June 10th.
Okay.
So about 3 weeks from now. Okay. Hopefully we will see a lot of other cool stretch goals
being that's one unlocked. Thing, I've noticed that there's the stretch goals you launch with, and then as you knock past and blow past those, you start to introduce more or something.
Yeah, I mean, we could make up a list already from the start that is longer, but why? I mean, one of the perfect things with Kickstarter is that you can actually talk to the one who's going to play the game and ask for their suggestions and advice when it comes to what they want us to add to to the mix. Often, and this is one of the hardest things, for at least for me, when it comes to running a Kickstarter, sometimes you have to try to say and explain, no, we cannot do that because of this and this. But, currently, one of the things I'm battling with is, do we do a Simbrium custom die set? There are no special mechanics tied to the dice, sort of, you know, like the equipment dice for Mutant Year Zero games. So, and we are using, you know, the standard D4 to D20 set. Right. So, yeah. I don't know.
Material. I don't know. You do like ceramic dice or something like that.
Yeah. But those also exist. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I would like to do like maybe one set per faction or something like that. Do you play? Do you want to play on the nature side of things or on the civilization side, maybe? Or, yeah.
Decisions.
Yeah.
So when do you think, if everything goes well, when do you think delivery of like the beta PDFs and all that?
Yeah. So my absolute target is to go to print by the end of October.
Okay.
That would mean we're talking tentatively here now, right? No blood promises or but that's my absolute aim, and that would mean that we need to get beta feedback a couple of weeks before that, meaning that we have to circulate the beta PDFs mid-September, maybe? Starting in mid-September, at least.
Okay.
Now, if this is possible, I really don't know, because it seems like people assume that when you, at least when Free Leagues runs the Kickstarter, we already have everything done. That's really not the case. And especially not in this case. I'm still working on the Wendelin setting book, and in parallel, I am also working on updating the core book and the other stuff that we are going to have in this game line, a new and updated revised anniversary game line. So there is still a lot of stuff to do before we can start and lay out. And of course, we have Martin Griep, the artist, who is hard at work, mainly with producing artwork for the new setting book. We do have some new art in new covers, and there will be a new character art also in, you know, all these occupations that I talked about. He wasn't super happy with the old ones, so we'll see new. But most of the concept art and whatnot will not be changed. Luckily, because then we would have to wait until 2035 before seeing any books.
Yeah, it does take a lot of time.
But that's my hope. And if everything goes like we hope, delivery or maybe even a release in April 2027, because and that would mean that we have the option or we can circulate the books to backers before then, of course. That is, we always try to do this. It's been a challenge lately, I should say, because shipping has been kind of challenging.
Yeah.
So we try to do good by our backers to see that they get the stuff first. Yeah, always.
I got the email this morning that the Arcand Dragonbane books are starting to ship, not to the U.S. yet, but to the UK.
One of my books, or not only me, but the Book of Magic.
Oh, you did the Magic? Oh, okay. Oh. Yeah, there's Magic's already pretty fun in Dragonbane, so I've gone through the PDFs, but I haven't really... I want the books in my hands, really.
You should play a demonologist. They are.
Yeah. That sounds. They are cool. I did look at the demonologist spells. It was like pretty horrific.
In a fun way.
In a fun way. Mm.
I actually wrote them like rebels. You know, the standing up to the man. In order to get the power to stand up to the oppressors of the human society, they tend to make pacts with people. I mean, demons may turn out to be kind of equally horrible. So
that's by the end of our Dragonbane campaign, it was like we decided that there's really. Yeah, you know, the Eternal Flame, the two main factions, the Illidan side and the demon side. Mm. Neither one of those sides were like really good people. so that was fun. Really great game. But Sabarum, I'm intrigued. I've got some stuff to read up on here. I've got some of the PDFs for the original set, but these new kind of this expanding of the world seems like a big undertaking. But I think there's a lot of people that'd be really super happy that you're, you know, giving this series a lot of love and care.
I mean, there are those who are still playing the Throne of Thorns, and I mean it's like you can pick up one of the great campaigns, Curse of Strahd or Mouse of Nyarlathotep, or you can pick up
the Warhammer one.
Enemy Within today, hopefully that will be the case with the Throne of Thorns as well. It will live on, even if me as a designer now have moved away to another setting, and we'll try to fill that with life somehow, some way.
That's one of the greatest things about role playing games is the rule sets don't expire. The stories don't expire. You can always go back to them and. So yeah, I appreciate what you do. This was already a huge part of my life, but since doing the podcast, it's really completely taken over. it's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate the freely being so open and willing to talk to smaller shows like that.
Of course.
Any final thoughts? Any final words?
I usually end my Kickstarter post with a pretty corny little phrase, namely just saying happy gaming.
happy gaming everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today, Matthias, and go check out the Kickstarter. I'll have all the links in the description, and talk to you soon.
See you there. Bye.